Chapter 22. The Emperor's Will. By evening, battle moved away from Tyros. The coughing thunder of the defense lasers on Keleton troubled the twilight occasionally, but the time between their discharge was lengthening as the fleet battle drifted out of their lines of fire. The vast shape of Galatan grew, bleached out by the last moments of daylight's death. An airy painting of a castle, ramparts picked out in shades of ethereal blue and purple, glowing with 10 million points of light. A phantom fortress whose destructive power was all too real. Armadas crowded it, fighting their own wars. Galatan's traces of plasteel loomed behind the naval fight, a mountain range in space, more backdrop to the struggle than a part of it, it seemed, as distant hills framed the combat of armies upon the ground. But these hills spoke with fire and thunder, targeting all and sundry around the fortress. The allegiances of the ships were unknown to the soldiers upon the walls of Tyros. Matthew had learned enough of warfare at every scale to guess that Galatan was contested, and different banks of weapons fired on different targets depending on who held them. The tread of armored feet approached from behind. The machine whine of powered armor was well known to him now. Too light for a space marine. A sister, he thought. He smiled to himself. Ireland had come to him, as he had expected. All was as the Emperor ordained. "Sister Superior Iolanth," he said, without turning around.
"Freitar Matthew," she said, and came to stand by him. She rested her red armoured hands upon the parapet. The coming dark dulled the colour of her armour, casting it with a bloody tint.
"Such hands are steeped in the vitae of martyrs," thought Matthew. Being near so pure a tool of the Emperor's will sent a shiver of delight through him that threatened to trip the castigator routines of his autoflagellator. He tapped the palm button with his index finger, considering setting it off manually anyway to punish his unseemly pleasure. "It pleases me you use my humble title," said Matthew. "Humility is a virtue in the eyes of the Lord of Terror."
"A vain man cannot expect grace," she agreed. "Nevertheless, I respect you as militant apostolic as much as I do a mere freighter," she said. "You are bold and fight with honour. Your reputation for valour has reached my ears."
"Do not call me brave," he corrected her. "I do not acknowledge fear because I have nothing to fear. The Emperor is my comrade at arms and protects me at all times."
"Praise be," she said.
"Praise be," he responded.
"It is a hard battle," she said, looking out at the flash and roar of the plains, then up to the phantasmal castle. "I wish I were away from here, in the fight."
"You could be," said Matthew, with a sly glance. "Go down to the fields of worship, wield your holy tools in bloody praise, and I shall tell no one." She laughed at his conspiratorial tone.
"I have my duty here. We may be denied guardianship of the Holy Child, but we will stand ready to be called. The Emperor ordains it. The Red Sacrament must wait. What of you? Will you not go to the front?"
"I have been ordered to stay here also," said Matthew. This was something of a lie. He had requested to remain to be nearer to the girl.
"For the sake of the child?" she asked.
"Not entirely," he laughed shamefacedly. "It is because I annoy the most sainted Primarch." That much was true.
"Your personality or your calling?" she asked neutrally.
"I am vain enough to believe he has a little time for me as a man, but he has very little respect for priests in general," said Matthew.
"Then what they say about him is true?" she asked. "He does not believe in the divinity of the most holy God Emperor."
Matthew nodded. "Lamentably so. He witnesses all the wonders of his father around him, and yet he cannot see his power at work. Gilliman denies it."
"How can he not believe?" asked Iolanth,
troubled by the idea. Matthew spoke thoughtfully.
"It is as if he is willingly blind.
He does not want to see it, so he does not. The Lord Gilliman rarely speaks of his father. When he does, he insists on his humanity. I see it as my holy purpose to open Lord Gilliman's eyes, to make him see, to help him believe. He paused. I had a dream.
Good or bad?
A bad one with a good message.
The Emperor speaks to the most faithful through dreams.
So it is said, said Matthew, ambivalently. Let Iolanthe draw her own conclusions.
What did the dream tell you?
The grains of time slither by so eagerly, said Matthew. Battle goes on in the void and upon the plain. We teeter on the cusp of defeat. Soon, that vessel, O mighty Galatan, will be close enough to accurately target the surface of this world, and the battle will be decided. If the traitors hold sway there, we will perish. Imagine how more likely a favourable outcome would be if the Primarch were free to aid the defenders. He is detained here, and yet here, on this world, is the key to an easy victory. We should use what we have, aid him, and speed him on his way to orbit.
You are speaking of the child?
I am.
Lord Commander Gilliman ordered that she be held here, said Iolanthe.
Matthew smiled serenely at the mist hanging over the plains, where titans duelled with weapons of light and power, and a million men fought desperately beyond his sight. I would die to save the Primarch. I would gladly suffer all the torments of the warp if he would see clearly but for 1 second the truth of his father's nature. I'm sure, if he did, then mankind would prosper as never before.
He paused, then turned quickly to look the Sister Superior in the eye and spoke fervently.
Tell me, Sister Iolanthe, would you die to bring the son of the Emperor fully into his light as I would?
I would, she said. I desire nothing more than to serve the Master of Mankind with my life and my death.
Then kneel, he said.
She hesitated. He opened his hand and indicated the floor. Iolanthe dropped to one knee. Her braids swung over her face. Matthew rested his hand lightly upon the crown of her head.
I cannot tell you what is to come, for that is the Emperor's gift alone. But I shall tell that the child can save the Primarch. By showing him he does not fight alone, but that his father is by his side, the Primarch can be brought into the Emperor's light. She might save the whole Imperium if she opens his eyes. Whosoever aids the girl will be called a saint.
Iolanthe looked up at him.
Why do you not do it?
I cannot act. The Primarch will be angry with the one who shows him the truth. I must be there to guide him once it has been presented to him. He will resist at first.
You are well placed to show him the way, Iolanthe said.
He nodded.
Then I know what must be done, she said.
I will not command you, said Matthew. I cannot. If you decide to follow this course, it must be by your own decision.
I have made my choice. Her voice dropped to a whisper. Bless me, militant apostolic, so I might be forgiven whatever transgressions I must make to fulfill the Emperor's will.
Sometimes good intentions require bad deeds to realize them. The Emperor's grace already surrounds you. I can see it. The light of purity enfolds you.
I am a good servant. My faith is strong.
I see that. It is a pure faith, a powerful faith. That is why the Primarch needs you when I cannot help him.
He gripped her head and closed his eyes.
In the name of the Emperor of Terra, Lord and Master of all mankind, I bless you and commend you to his protection.
He opened his eyes.
Rise, Sister Superior Iolanthe, he whispered.
Iolanthe stood. She gave Matthew a fierce look.
I am a warrior of the Emperor, and I shall serve him unto death.
Matthew smiled.
That is all he requires of us.
Now go and perform the Emperor's will.
Iolanth's warriors were armoured from head to toe, but they could move silently when needed. Two of them ghosted along the corridor towards the part of the Shorewood Bastion where the girl was kept, the faint whine of their armour mechanisms hidden by the thump of weapons being fired 100 kilometres away. They kept to the shadows, two at the rear, bolters up and ready to fire, a third out ahead, her knife in her hand. The lead sister came to a soundless halt, her hand up. Her sisters stopped a few metres up the corridor and covered her with their weapons. The advantage of infiltrating your own facility was that you knew where all the blind spots were. A sole member of Devorus's regiment stood guard at an intersection. There was only one. Nobody expected an attack from within the Imperial ranks. The door was locked. All six of the indicator lights on the door's control panel were an unwavering red. Though Tyros was not currently under threat, the soldier took his duty seriously, neither too relaxed or too tense to do his job properly. He stood at wary ease, his lasgun ready across his chest, finger straight beside the trigger guard. His vigilant eyes flicked back and forth, covering all three approaches to the door, ahead, left and right. The sisters shrank back when his gaze darted in their direction. Iolanth approached him from ahead. He did not stand to attention or salute, but shifted his gun ever so slightly, readying it to fire. He was a veteran killer. Ordinary men did not survive long in the Imperial Guard by taking things on trust.
"Sister Superior Iolanth," Iolanth announced herself, "I am here to see the child. Open the door."
"I know who you are, sister," said the soldier. "I can guess why you're here, and I'm not opening the door."
Some soldiers were highly religious and held the battle sisterhood in awe. Some soldiers didn't give a damn. Devorus had chosen his sentry carefully.
"Very well," said Iolanth. "I shall frame my request as an order. Open the door."
She moved a few centimetres to her left. The soldier followed her enough to keep her fully in his sight, but he didn't turn his back on the corridor to his left where the three sisters hid in the shadows. The soldier brought up his gun and sighted down the barrel.
"Back away from the door, sister," he said. "I can't let you through."
"That is regrettable," said Sister Iolanth.
The soldier was skilled, but she was better, moving to the side and grabbing the end of his lasgun with her open right hand. It discharged once, a lonely crack of superheated air. By the time Iolanth had crushed the barrel, the other sisters had moved up. The knife of the lead sister parted the man's neck, destroying his vocal cords and opening his veins before he could call out. He fell with a helpless gurgle. It did them no good. A sensor blinked on the man's breast, noting his stilled heart. An alarm went off. Now the game was up, other sisters came jogging down the corridors and took up firing positions.
"Thrown," said Iolanth.
The mission was turning regrettably bloody. The lights on the door blinked and turned blue.
"Lockdown. Squad Evangelists, remain here to repel reinforcements. Sister Rhapsody, crack the door. All of you, ready to follow me as soon as the way is open."
She readied her gun.
"The Emperor has decreed we face a challenge. In his praise, we shall rise to the test."
Sister Rhapsody took an oval implosion charge from her belt and clapped it to the door.
"Stand clear,"
she said, and withdrew. The grenade banged. The door burst inwards. Rhapsody kicked it back into its housing and stood to the side, making way for Iolanth to step over the soldier. As he was twitching his last, she was moving down the corridor. War blinked over the plains of Hecatone, casting coloured light upon the ceiling. Night was well entrenched, but battle raged. It will proceed for days, thought Devorus. He had welcomed the orders to remain behind, but now he was getting bored, and his companions made him uneasy. He itched to join the rest of the army in the simpler work of fighting. There were four people in the room. Devorus, the child, the Sister of Silence, and a giant Primaris space marine that Tetrarch Felix had set to watch over them. All space marines were strange to a baseline human, and most were emotionally stunted, with little interest in conversing with other men. But the Primaris type seemed even less talkative than their predecessors. This one stood in the corner, his blue armour blending with the shadows, still as a mountain. The sister was worse. She kneeled on the other side of the room, the point of her drawn sword against the floor, and her eyes closed in meditation. She had a name. Voy, he thought. He had been told several times, but it wouldn't stick in his memory, and every time he reminded himself of it, he doubted his mind. Her presence made him queasy. Despite the revulsion she engendered, his eyes kept sliding back to her. When she had come near to him, he had felt a terrifying, sucking nothingness, as if death stood at his side. He probed the sensation repeatedly, eliciting shudders every time, as if it was a sore tooth he could not leave alone. He needed distraction.
"Why don't you tell me your name?"
Devorus asked the child for the fourth time that day. By now, he had no expectation of an answer whatsoever. She had not spoken to him since their first meeting. Both her physical and mental condition had deteriorated. The girl pulled her knees tighter into her chin, her face buried in her arms, presenting a greasy head of hair at him. She had looked healthier when Ireland had first brought her in. He half feared she was ill with one of the enemy's diseases. She had been given a long nightdress, woven out of vegetable fibres, brushed until soft, a fine gown of a sort worn only by the wealthy. It was kind to the skin, but the sleeves and high collar couldn't hide the scars of excruciation on her flesh, and there were stiff patches, especially across her back, where leakage from her wounds had hardened. The hexagrammatic bonds she wore pulled at her wrists and ankles. Across the back of her neck, smaller chains snaked in and out of her hair.
"I'm sorry to keep asking," said Devorus, putting a smile into his voice he didn't entirely feel. "It seems like a reasonable question. We're going to be in here together for a while, until the fighting is done."
Devorus liked being useless only marginally more than he liked being bored. In other words, not at all. He'd had his fill of staring at the battle on the plain and the battle in the void. There had been precious little he could see during the day, even with his magnoculars, and now both conflicts had been reduced to glaring light shows that hurt his eyes. He gave up and sat down on the room's only chair. Without realizing, he had put his chair as far away from the Sister of Silence as it was possible to get, on the far side of the bed. This brought it closer to the Space Marine, but anything was better than being near to her. A moment's impulse had him kicking out his feet. Ordinarily, he watched the way he behaved. He was a high-ranking officer with standards to uphold, but he was so tired he was past caring. Resting himself for a few moments, he felt the weight of months of exhaustion pile on top of him again. He grunted in surprise, a strange, breathy explosion of air he hadn't meant to make at all, and sat forward.
"Fine. Sitting is bad."
"You are tired," said the girl in a small voice. "I can feel it."
Devorus clamped down hard on his amazement at her speaking. He had to handle this carefully, or she'd fall silent for good, he was sure.
"Can you now?" he said, with forced nonchalance.
He pulled his hands across his face and yawned. His eyes did not want to stay open.
"You know, since the Primarch arrived, I've had some time to sleep. It's only made me more tired."
"Why aren't you fighting?" she said.
She still didn't lift up her head to look at him.
"The Primarch, Emperor bless him, deemed my men and I worthy of respite from our long labours."
He leaned over and held up his hand to his mouth, comically shielding it from the Primaris Marine.
"He told me to stay here and look after you. He thought I was a good man for the job."
"Tetrarch Felix gave the order," said the Primaris Marine robotically.
"My, my, you can talk too,"
said Devorus, turning to the blue giant.
"Well, yes, I suppose he did."
He remembered the words and spoke them aloud, deepening his voice.
"Lord Gilliman will test her," the Tetrarch said. "He's got a very deep voice," he explained to the girl.
"Until then, she remains here. Do not allow her to depart this facility. Do not allow anyone but yourself to have contact with her, Devorus. Consider these orders as coming from the Primarch himself." Very serious stuff.
The Primaris Space Marine still had not moved.
Is that it? You're going to wake up for a spot of pedantry, then fall back asleep?
I am not asleep, said the Primaris Marine. I do not need to sleep for another 36 hours.
Fine, he said. The Primaris Marine put him on guard almost as much as the sister. His fear came out as irritation.
I correct you because incorrect information compromises efficiency, offered the Primaris Marine.
He's a charming one, this fellow, said Devorus.
The girl peeked out from under her fringe. Devorus leaned in a little closer.
Charm's probably not needed when you're that big.
Isn't that so?
He said to the Primaris Marine. The Primaris Marine said nothing.
So, he said, clapping his hands on his knees and doing his best not to glance at the sister again, he returned his attention to the girl.
We're in here together. I thought asking your name wasn't an unreasonable question.
Kalia, she whispered. My name is Kalia.
Devorus smiled. That felt like a triumph.
Thank you.
I didn't say before, because it's not important anymore, she whispered. Only he is.
Why don't we talk about him? Devorus said. I'm getting a little bored, you see, Kalia, and he's not much of a conversationalist. He nodded over at the Primaris Marine. He didn't refer to the sister.
Don't look at her, Devorus thought. Just don't.
He doesn't have much to talk about, Kalia said. He doesn't think like you. He doesn't care about the same things you do. Not food, or sleep, or love, or peace. He wants to serve like you, but that is all he wants. He wants to fight.
Really? Said Devorus.
His eyes strayed to the hexagrammatic chains. They were proof against psychic ability. And then there was the sister. Kalia couldn't be reading the warrior's mind. He glanced at the Primaris Marine. He looked resolutely ahead.
I can sense it, she said. Ever since he came to me, I've known things about people without being told.
When did this begin? Asked Devorus.
A week ago, she said.
Were your powers fully fledged? He asked.
Ordinarily, he kept what little he did know about psychers quiet. Talking about such matters brought unwelcome attention on a man, and he didn't know much anyway. What he did know was that it wasn't unusual for psychic tendencies to manifest during the teens. He wasn't convinced that was the case here. He looked Kalia over carefully. Such times as he had been exposed to the abilities of nascent witches had been very different. Minor poltergeist activity or uncanny readings of the Emperor's tarot. People like that didn't tend to last long. Devorus had helped round up more than a few himself. The devices used to contain psychers had a devastating effect on them. Their minds dulled to the point of stupidity. They suffered pain. Devorus had seen chains like Kalia's only once before, when a powerful witch resisted detention and the black ship crews had come down from on high like the vengeance of the Emperor himself. The effect they had on the psyker had been terrible. When Devorus had touched them, they made him vomit, and he was as psychic as a ferrocrete block. So it was disturbing the girl wore them like they were jewellery. Even so, he felt no danger from her.
They're not my powers, she said. They're his.
She looked up at him defiantly.
You want to serve. He wants to serve. So do I. I let them hurt me. I let them to show them that what I say is true. The Emperor, it is him. He tells me to fight. Why am I being kept here? He doesn't want it. He wants to help the Primarch.
A witchfire glow glinted in her eyes. Phantom tastes filled Devorus's mouth. Her flesh should be burning under the chains. He swallowed. He glanced up at the sister. She was staring at the girl with unfriendly eyes.
You're afraid of me, Kalia said. You shouldn't be. I won't hurt you, but I must leave.
I think it's for the best if you stay here, said Devrus. He looked again to the Primaris Space Marine, hoping for some indication of support. The warrior stared ahead, expressive as an empty suit of armour.
Please, she said. She'll kill you if you don't let me go.
Devrus's spine went icy. He looked again at the sister. She was standing, hefting her sword. Kalia might be referring to Voy. He stood again and straightened his tunic.
We'll see what the Primarch says.
He needs my help, the girl said.
We'll see what the Primarch...
The wail of the alarm cut Devrus dead. He stiffened. His hand went instantly to his holstered las pistol. The shouts of his men at the guardroom next door spilled out into the corridor. An explosion followed, short and hollow. The Sister of Silence went to the girl's side, her massive sword held ready. Her proximity to Devrus made him nauseous, but again the girl seemed unaffected.
Crack bomb, said Devrus.
More explosions followed.
Bolters?
He said incredulously, but he already knew who was coming.
Wait here, said the Primaris Marine.
The Space Marine stepped sideways through the door without even looking to see what awaited him, his gun levelled and firing as soon as it was clear of the room. Devrus didn't heed him and followed, peeking through the gap between transhuman warrior and door jamb. Men were shouting. The air was thick with physoline and the ozone smell of ionized air. The body of one of his men lay on the ground. Devrus couldn't see much past the Primaris Marine. The Space Marine had his bolt rifle up tight into his shoulder and was switching targets with alarming surety, squeezing off staccato bursts. The roar of a melter gun changed that. The Primaris Marine staggered backwards. A wash of air, hot with vaporized ceramite and burned flesh, singed Devrus's nostrils. He was almost too slow in stepping back. His eyes swam with the heat. The Primaris Marine crashed down hard, a neat hole in his torso. Greasy meat smoke rose from the wound. Incredibly, he was still alive, attempting to get up with half his organs cooked. A hail of bolts slammed into him, breaking his armour and detonating in his flesh. Fragments of metal peppered Devrus's leg. It hurt, but he had been injured worse than that before, and he drew his las pistol on the women advancing down the corridor. He didn't waver, even when they paused to finish off his men. Iolanth emerged from the gunsmoke.
"Put the gun down," she said.
Her voxmeter granted her voice an extra layer of authority. He almost obeyed.
"I don't think I will," he said. "You better surrender before this situation gets worse."
"You can't hurt me with that pistol, not in this armour."
"I could," he said.
"You'd have to be lucky, and the Emperor is with me today, Devrus. You know what she is. The Emperor has a plan for her. You are a faithful man, a true warrior of the Emperor. Heed his call. He needs your help."
"I would prefer it if the Primarch were a judge of that. She's a psyker. She could be dangerous."
"The Primarch cannot see what is in front of him. She's no psyker."
"Know him well, do you?" said Devrus. "I'll take your surrender. Drop your weapons. Come on, do it now. This can finish, if you choose."
Iolanth's warriors spread out across the narrow corridor, taking positions in doorways, covering the way they had come.
"You've seen the miracle she performed, Devrus," said Iolanth. "Those chains don't stop her. She is not warp-touched, but something else. Something glorious."
"I've seen a lot of things," said Devrus. "Some of them have been like this. Some of them have been performed by good people, others by people bad through and through. All of them have ended badly. She might save this world, but she'll damn it in doing so."
"There are many powers at work in the galaxy. Not all of them are evil."
He smiled sadly.
"I can't agree with that. It is always, always better to assume the worst."
He pushed his thumb along the power slide of his las pistol, bringing it up to maximum.
"Major Devrus, you are a good man, but good men must suffer so that all may live. They are blessed who are martyrs, for they shall be with him at his side for eternity. Drop your gun to the floor, and you may continue to serve him in this life."
"You can't do this! These are the Primarch's orders.
The child is to remain here.
My guidance comes from a higher power, the highest of all.
Devris's finger twitched over the trigger.
I can't let you. I'm sorry.
Laz light flashed. The beam duration was too short to register on human vision. The noise of its passage and impact were too closely spaced to tell apart, blended into one loud bang. Smoke curled over Iolanth's heart. Devris was a good shot. Iolanth was only a meter away, but her armor was amongst the best in all the Imperium, and though her undersuit was visible through the hole, she was unharmed and unmoved. Devris was mildly surprised to see he had broken the surface of the armor at all.
I am sorry, Devris, said Iolanth. The Emperor's will cannot be obstructed by any man, especially one as inconsequential as you. May you live forever in the Emperor's light.
Iolanth's gun barked. Iolanth advanced into the room over Devris's body, her weapon roaring.